everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom's engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass, and together we welcome you to the program. It is Thursday, the 16th of July, 2020. We are doing our darndest to try to bring Southern Arizonans together right here on the good old radio in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. We broadcast on 1030 Tucson's Voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. And of course, we piggyback the live feed from KVOI.com. Tom, a question for you. It was 75 years ago today. It was very early in the morning. There was a big event, and it happened not far from here. It actually, a device that was called the Gadget was detonated not far from here, east of here. Do you have any idea what that might have been?
Well, you said detonated, so was it on a tower in White Sands, New Mexico?
Yes, very close to what is now White Sands National Park, and it was the beginning of the atomic age. And you talk about an event that has changed history. My goodness, 75 years ago. Let's welcome now Paul Cunningham. He's the vice mayor of the city of Tucson. Councilman Cunningham joins us once a month for his visit with us, with our Buckmaster Show listeners. Paul, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful, Bill. Thanks for having me on the show.
Paul, I got to thinking yesterday. I saw this survey. Apparently, somebody surveyed all 50 states, which state had the most resistance to wearing a mask. And guess what? Arizona was number one. And that got me thinking, you know, when a vaccine comes along, even now, 50% of the public won't take a flu shot. But I think what's going to happen is you're going to have what will turn out to be, Paul Cunningham, almost like a de facto mandatory shot. When I say de facto, no, the government will not say you must take it, but you will find businesses, airlines, they're going to want to see proof of vaccine. Some of your thoughts, Paul.
Well, I don't know. We opened a press conference in March, and the only thing I said at the time was the only certainty we have about what's going on is uncertainty. And that continues today. One of the things everybody's talking about vaccines, vaccines, vaccines. I think we should be taking a look at treatments as well. We may get lucky. It may be phenobarbital. It may be cholesterol medications. It may be monoclonal antibodies. We don't really know what kind of treatments are out there. I think a lot of people will feel a lot safer if the vaccine is available. A lot of people are saying it may only be 50 or 60% effective. What I think would really make people comfortable is knowing that if they go get care at a hospital or they go get care from their doctor, there's a way to treat this stuff. And that's, I think, more important. I think there are every day around the world, different doctors and medical groups and universities are studying ways to treat or to prevent this disease. And we've just got to show a little patience. I'd rather we kind of blend the timetables a little bit where we use some common sense in driving our policy, where we say, okay, we're going to close down for this long until the report of this such and so drug comes out, which is expected in the next 5 or 6 weeks, and then reevaluate. And I think that would be a better way to kind of move forward in what we're doing. I think that, again, whether we like it or not, masking up and continuing social distancing and limiting big gatherings is just a fact of life we've got to deal with. But I think it would be a lot more tolerable if we kind of saw the light at the end of the tunnel. If we had a timetable where we could point to an event and say, okay, you know, this is what we're going to do for the next 5 weeks. And then there's going to be a report out about the AstraZeneca vaccination or the Moderna vaccination or Regeneron's monoclonal antibodies, which are actually being tested here in Tucson, by the way. And I think then we get that report, and if there's high efficacy, we can say, all right, we're gonna phase in our opening. Or the other thing we could do is we could set benchmarks and say, okay, as long as Pima County's reporting less than 25 new cases a day for 5 days in a row, then we can do some things, and we can, you know, maybe open bars back up or whatever. But we've got to set these benchmarks and goals that are tangible on how we drive our policy, instead of just saying and make them public and transparent, instead of just saying, hey, until further notice, everybody's wearing a mask and everybody's in shelter in place until we decide it's okay not to be. That isn't how you govern. That isn't how you get buy-in from constituents and citizens. If we say, hey, we're going to close bars and limit social gatherings and have masks, but if we get down to less than 25 cases a day, maybe we can open up parks, or maybe we can open up pools, or what, however we want to frame it. And that conversation to me has to be had.
Let's switch gears here. There is a lobbying effort going on. We've been running some spots in the morning on our morning show about backing the police and urging people to send emails to you and your colleagues on the council about not to defund the police. I assume, does this come up for some kind of a vote next week?
Yes. Well, we vote on the final budget next week. I'm already on the record stating that I don't think it's I think there's some validity into the idea that we have a racism problem and police departments around the country. I think there's some validity into the idea that we can transition some of our police resources into social work things. But at this time, I think that's a process. I think that's a long process. I think we have to discuss kind of the specifics on that. And I don't think we're ready to do that. I think we're going to try to shift a little bit some culture into helping people. But for now, I don't think there's any validity into defunding the police as a reactionary measure. Right now, Tucson has about 16 officers per 10,000 people, which is right barely in the margin. The goal for me, but when I talked about campaigning, was to get to 20 per 10,000 people. If some of those are crisis response officers or MIST type officers or more social work oriented officers, that's fine. But we need to get to 20 responders per 10,000 people. And we're not there yet. And we need to get to, I think, 1,080 responders to get there. And we don't have that right now. We have 67 CSOs. And so if we want to expand CSOs and have less armed response, or we want to have a crisis intervention team, or we want to have clinicians on 911 calls, or we want to transition to some TC3 models similar to what fire does in dispatching social workers to certain type of calls, I'm fine with that stuff like that. I'm actually all ears about stuff like that. But that's a pretty complicated process. And the second we dispatch a social worker to a situation that's really dangerous and someone's injured or harmed, then we have other problems. So we've got to make sure we're keeping people safe. And the only way to do that is to ensure that our police are properly funded and have the resources that they need. So at this point, I think that the funding discussion or defunding the police, it's a great buzzword, and, you know, police reform and transitioning resources within the police department to do better things for better service delivery are great goals. But actually taking money out of that budget, I can't be behind right now.
And I know you can't speak for the other members of the council, but do you think that there's this appetite like you have not to go in that direction or what?
Well, I think all of us, I don't think anybody's saying not to ever go in that direction. I think everybody's saying, okay, we understand what the BLM people are saying, and they're right and on a lot of things, and there's a lot of things there that make sense. But at the same time, actually defunding the police and reducing, I mean, first of all, the only concrete suggestion that's come in is the air support unit. And so if we wanted to save some money on air support, we could probably combine with Pima County and maybe move to drone technology. But we're going to have some listening sessions over the next year on how to accomplish some of these things. And we really need to see what comes out of these listening sessions first. And so just to cut police for the sake of cutting police doesn't make any sense. Again, I go back to, so what are you going to do when we have hit and run accidents? And what are we going to do when we have homicide victims? And what are we going to do when we have burglaries in progress or armed robberies in progress? We still need response to that. We still need coverage to that. I think there's some things we can do where we have calls that require some de-escalation, and if the scene is secure, we're probably better having a clinician or trained social worker on that scene than officers. And we got to let cops be cops, but there's a long discussion on how we transition to that way. So again, I don't think any of us, all of us understand what the idea behind this quote defund movement is, end quote, but to actually just take money away and cut the number of officers on the street makes absolutely zero sense to me right now.
All right, stay with us. Paul Cunningham, Vice Mayor, City Tucson, will be with us right after we take the break in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios on this Thursday afternoon. Be right back.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com. Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on this Thursday afternoon. I'm Bill Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, speaking with Paul Cunningham, Tucson City Councilman and Vice Mayor, who in our first segment said that he has really no appetite to defund the police when that discussion comes up next week. Paul, you grew up in Tucson. You're the son of a highly respected former Arizona lawmaker who worked in the governor's office. Growing up, did you ever feel that this was a racially troubled city, Tucson, Arizona?
I think that everybody needs to be honest with themselves and say yes. I mean, you can't look it. I can say that I didn't ever feel it per se. I didn't, you know, I looked at things a different way back then. I can say that I feel that I've, you know, tried to avoid being racist myself, but you got to kind of look at the nuances in the 70s and 80s and, you know, who did you actually hang out with and who were your actual friends and were, you know, I worked at juvenile court in the detention unit for 2 years, and the social circles in the pods, the kids would hang out with kids of similar ethnicity, they divide. And I think we're better. I think the youth are going to have a better handle on this. I think the youth it's going to take a few generations, but to deny racism, deny its existence, I think is irresponsible. It's out there. And I think that a lot of people, when they take a good long look, I'm not saying that everybody's a chronic racist their whole life, but I'm saying that people have had racist thoughts and people have had, you know, have stereotypes and preconceived notions that come up from time to time. It's wrong. And it's hard to admit that to yourself. But I think that everyone should take that good long look and try their best to not partake in prejudice and not stereotype. So I'll say that, you know, did I see a major problem in Tucson? Not necessarily, but it doesn't mean it didn't exist, and it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist now. I think a big piece to that is also not just the ethnic and racial divide, but the socioeconomic divide. And I think that we come into a culture where certain people want to be segregated socioeconomically, and I don't know if that's actually good for us. So I'll leave it there, but that's kind of my take on it.
The budget has not been formally adopted. What is this process next week all about?
So you have to tentatively adopt the budget, and then we formally adopt the budget. We'll have one more public hearing. This is the, you know, we've had 3 or 4 years where we've adopted the budget, and the public hearing has lasted a total of 6 minutes. You know, we've had maybe 3 or 4 speakers. This year, we've now had 2 75-minute public hearings, and we're going to have one more. Most of the people are talking about the defund police issue. A lot of people are disappointed that it took 2 months to find out about the in-custody deaths and feel that there's some type of effort by the police to downplay them or cover them up. I think that's what's eroded some of the trust there. But the bottom line is that we keep balancing the budget every year. We keep trying to be responsible. We keep trying to maximize resources. We keep moving money into things that, you know, try to quell that socioeconomic divide. So I liked the manager's budget as it was presented. I feel that in the times that we're in with the pandemic, with everything kind of in some type of uncertainty, we need to be as stable and steady as possible. So I think we revote this budget, and I think we have to revisit it every couple months and evaluate what our cash flow looks like, what the state share revenues look like. I think we're in for kind of a long haul here, unless the vaccinations and treatments come online.
Other than law enforcement, what are some of the other highlights of this budget? That are there any major cuts anywhere?
No, a lot of them are cuts to service or service delivery changes that have been made due to COVID. So, you know, like we're going to probably see a cut in the aquatics budget, but that's because none of the pools are open. And we may bank some of that money for next year. This budget doesn't have a lot of actualized changes. We're not reducing any of our workforce right yet. We have not looked at furloughs. The only thing we did was we did some vacancy, you know, we did a hiring freeze, we did some vacancy savings, and we froze salaries. We're not giving raises right now. Obviously, that would be kind of irresponsible. So those are the, you know, we're just trying to steady the flow and the ship because it's uncertain. And, you know, one of the things that would lead to that uncertainty is all of a sudden kicking people out of their jobs and saying, hey, you know, sorry, pal, you're out of a job because there's a pandemic going on. And now we create the atmosphere of people who are now in need. And so it we're kind of in that state right now. The most important, I think, piece to the city council right now, our biggest mission is to be a stabilizing force and to ensure that life goes on. And so we've got to do that first. And then we have to base our second piece into public health. And I think our second priority has to be public health and what puts public health at the least risk. And then our third priority right now is to look at, you know, how can we maneuver our economic status to the best place possible in this crisis and minimize the economic ramifications of the pandemic. And so those are the things that we look at. Those are the things we talk about every day. And those are the things that we look. I mean, everyone who knows me knows that my number one, my favorite thing in the world is college athletics. I live for Arizona football, basketball, baseball, softball. I follow my son's teams. I follow, you know, I love sports. Everybody knows that about me. And the fact of the matter is the pandemic has destroyed it, destroyed the idea of college athletics or high school athletics as we know it for next year. And that's a really tough pill to swallow. And so for me, that's like kind of my driving thing is that, hey, when we've got college, when we got high school baseball back up and running, when we got high school basketball back up and running, then I'm going to feel normal again. And I want, you know, that's just for me. Other people, it's, hey, when I can go to the symphony or I can go to U of A Presents. For some people, it's when I can go to my yoga class. But whatever it is, that's when people are going to feel normal again. And my goal is to get us there as soon as we can, as safe as we can. And the only way we can do that is to measure every single decision that we make with honesty and with deliberation and be as deliberate as possible in how we benchmark each step moving forward.
You know, if the U of A does not bring students back, that's going to be a huge economic hit, isn't it?
Yep. I mean, you got to hand it to Dr. Robbins. Right away, he put together a blue ribbon group and said, look, we're going to get the best people and we're going to find it. We're going to look for a way and find a way. And if there isn't a way, we're going to say there isn't a way. And the crazy thing about that is that everyone's looking to the U of A right now, nationwide. They're like, have you found a way? And if the U of A says, hey, this is the way you can reopen, and it'll go back to depending on those different treatments and vaccinations, their availability, social distancing strategies, double, you know, everybody having an N95 mask. There's all kinds of different things out there that mitigate and reduce risk. The newest one this week, I think in the last 48 hours, there's been a development or an enlightened development that cholesterol drugs can possibly not prevent COVID or stop COVID, but cholesterol drugs can actually mitigate the damage it does. And so that's, again, every day there's a new conversation. And this latest one could be another, well, not so much. And we may find out later that that isn't true, but I try to leave no rock unturned in this process. Every day I Google different things just to see what developments exist. I think that it's interesting that the, your news set ended up right now where the Russians were trying to steal AstraZeneca's formula for vaccination. Well, that kind of troubles me right there, because in my opinion, all five of the pharmaceutical companies should be collaborating and trying to come up with the best virus killer and best vaccination possible. And the fact that when you Google some of these progress of these vaccinations, the first sites that come up are money sites like Motley Fool and CNBC and all Wall Street Journal, and they're all talking about stock prices. And I got to tell you, Bill, you know, I never really bought into a lot of conspiracy theory stuff, but this whole process for me in watching these CEOs kind of manipulate their stock prices has been really troubling. And it definitely makes me question some of the big pharma's motives. The other thing that's interesting is
real
somebody
quickly
will come up with a really good idea for a cure, and right away a big pharmaceutical company will debunk it and sponsor a study that says no. So those are the things that trouble me here.
All right, Paul Cunningham, thanks a lot. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Bill Buckmaster.
Bye-bye.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Tomorrow, our Friday Focus interview, I will have the three Republican candidates for Congress in District Number 2 with me in studio. That's going to happen tomorrow during the noon hour in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Have you been by Green Things yet to get all your gardening needs? They have everything you possibly could imagine, every imaginable plant that grows in this part of the country on their 13 acres. Check it out, Green Things. Their motto and their logo, 50 years and still growing. So all of it began back in 1970. They're open daily over at 3384 East River Road, greenthingsaz.com, and zocalovillage.com are the particular websites to get you going. All right, now we resume our 2020 Your Vote, Your Voice candidate interview series. All of our three daily local talk shows are doing candidate interviews, and then we archive them at KVOI.com. We welcome now the former sheriff of Pima County, Chris Nanos, a Democrat who is involved in a primary to see who will be facing off against the incumbent sheriff, Mark Napier. Chris, how are you?
I'm very good, Bill. Thank you.
Tell me why you decided that you would like to be the sheriff of Pima County again.
Well, and we've had this conversation before, but I'll just briefly tell you that, you know, I've been retired since 2016 after the election, and my wife and I have enjoyed traveling. But here this past year, I started getting a number of phone calls and a number of people coming to me and talking to me from within the department, stating their concerns. And they've all said what a mistake they made in endorsing and backing Mark Napier, and that they want me to come back. And so after giving it good consideration, talking with my wife, we decided, you know, this is family. I spent 30-plus years with these people, and they mean the world to me. So we're gonna come back and try to take care of the things that Mark didn't do and get our department its fine reputation that it's always had and get that back.
How do you differ from your opponent, who we spent a few minutes with yesterday, Mr. Kubinski, on the Democratic ballot, Chris Nanos?
Well, you know, there's two ways. One is experience. And I mean, it's very clear. Kevin has zero management skills at all. He's never been a manager. He took the test, failed miserably, and just gave up. Never took the test again. I went through the process. I took the sergeant's test. In fact, the first time I tested, I probably was 41 out of 40 candidates. It was a tough process, and I persevered and kept testing and learning and moved up the rank. And I took my lieutenant's test and didn't come out number one in that either. And same with my captain's and chief's exam. It's a competitive process, but you gain respect, you gain knowledge, you grow, and you gain respect from those you compete with. Today, unfortunately, that competition is done away with because it's all by appointment. But Kevin just has zero of that experience or expertise. I have over 20 years of management experience, 40 years of law enforcement experience. I've worked all areas of the department. In fact, the only sheriff and deputy for 150 years, 55 years in this department that has worked every assignment in that building, in this department. So, yeah, we differ a lot there, but there's one other way we differ, and it's called integrity. You know, my opponent speaks of a lot of integrity, that he has it. But the truth be known, and I heard him yesterday, he continues to lead this false narrative, trying to imply or insinuate that I had some sort of guilt involved with the RICO mess that I inherited. That is so far from the truth, and he knows that. He knows the truth behind it. Because let's not forget, he's the one who went out and recruited Mark Napier. He not only recruited him, he got his own association that he was the president of to to endorse him. And now they see what they got. And they've unendorsed him. They're now backing me. The commanders are backing me. The civilians are backing me. They're not backing Kevin. You don't see a billboard up there saying, hey, we need change. We need Kevin Kibitzki here. No, the billboard was real clear. And it's from the employees, all of them. They want me back. So, yeah, Kevin's lack of integrity is simply this. If I know the truth and they're slandering me or they're slandering Kevin and I know it to be false, I'm going to step out and be a man of integrity and say, hey, that case was investigated by the FBI, the U.S. attorney, the AG, the whole world. And Nanos was found every time to be cleared of any wrongdoing and have any kind of knowledge of it. And for him to continue with that lie is really disappointing, but also it's shameful because he not only slanders someone who's given 40 years of his life to public service, dedicated public service, but he's also brought down a department that, you know, Bill, you've been around this county for how long?
32 years.
This agency was a great agency that the whole time you've been here. And you've never heard of any scandals or anything like that. And yet, because somebody had their own self-interest, they saw an opportunity when Sheriff Dubnyk left here and he stepped down, nobody was ever going to defeat him. He was a great sheriff. He did a lot of good things for this community, and people know that and recognize that. But they saw an opportunity when he stepped down, and they took it. And they wedged their way in the cracks with a bunch of lies. And tried to tie me to a problem that was going on that they knew about, and they did nothing about it.
What will be
use it for political fodder?
Chris Nanos, what will be your first act if you move on past the primary and defeat the incumbent sheriff? What would be your first act with your department?
Well, the first thing I would do is very first thing. Is I would walk into my financial manager's office and tell him that he works for nobody, absolutely nobody, but me. I am he directly reports to me because there's where the problem lies. Ron G is a great man. He's a good man, a good human being, and an honest man. And he tried to get a memo past Chief Woolridge, and Mark Napier knows this. He tried to get a memo past the chief to me to say, hey, what you're doing here with RICO funds is wrong. And Chief Woolridge stopped that. What people need to understand is Chief Woolridge, Carl Woolridge, Kevin Kibitzki, and Mark Napier put together what they called the Midnight Coup. That was in 2016. I'd never heard of anything like this until 2-3 years later after I left the office. That this came to me from people like Sergeant Bill Phillips, who has more integrity on his little finger than the three of them being combined. These came from people out there in the organization who know these things. You know, Bill, today I talked to somebody and he said, man, it's so hard to get information on local candidates. How do you do that? Because, you know, I look at Chris Nanos' website and of course it's going to be all pro Chris Nanos or Kibitzki is going to be pro. Where do I find it? Because the media really is focused on, and I understand why, the president race, the Senate race. I mean, some big, big races, but local candidates, thank you for your show because that's about the only way we get out there. Local candidates, hard to find good information. And I told them this. You know, there's two ways to look at that, because you're absolutely right. I would look for people out there who have no agenda, no political connections. And so I'm asking your viewers and I'm asking you to write this name down. The name is Dave Ashman, A-S-H-M-A-N. And on June 21, go to his Facebook post dated June 21 and look at the stories he tells about an incident he had with Kibitzki. You look at that incident, and it was all over a blowing horn, and this man is slammed to the ground and cut up and this, that, that, all in front of his kids and his wife, his family. And this isn't some punk out there. This is a 33-year-old man who is an electrical engineer at Raytheon who gets treated this way by Kibitzki, and he says it best.
All
this
right.
Man has no business being a sheriff, much less a deputy, so...
Chris Nanos,
he's not alone. There are others out there.
I'm going to have to leave it right there. Your website, please.
Oh, www.chrisnanosforsheriff, and that's F-O-R, not the number, forsheriff.com.
Chris Nanos, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill.
Chris Nanos, the Democrat, one of the two Democrats running for sheriff, and this series we're putting together, and we've really been doing these interviews since January. All of our interviews are archived at KVOI.com. We've got another one right after the break. We'll talk with John Backer. Mr. Backer would like to be the Pima County Supervisor representing District Number 4. That's next on the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. If you've been to Denver, you know they're kind of known as what, the Mile High City. Well, Silver City over in beautiful New Mexico is about almost within a few feet the exact elevation of Denver. And you know that translates into cooler temperatures. And we like to say this time of year, it's about 10 degrees, but I think it's going to be closer to 15 this weekend. Boy, what a beautiful weekend over in Silver City with temperatures in the upper 80s. We're going to be doing 104, 105, somewhere like that. So if you're looking for a great weekend getaway this weekend, head over to Silver City, about a three-hour drive, and enjoy yourself in cooler climes. SouthwestNewMexico.org is the starting place to plan your trip. We continue now with our 2020 Your Vote, Your Voice candidate interview series, trying to give some of the candidates a chance to tell our listeners what they're all about. And of course, ballots have now been in the hands of early voters for almost a week now. This primary, there's only about, I think it was like 3 weeks from yesterday that, we're within 3 weeks of when this thing is over. So we're getting to the point here where it's time to fill out your ballot. John Backer is a Republican in District 4. John is challenging the incumbent, Steve Christie. John, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing, Mr. Buckmaster?
I'm doing very well. Why did you decide to make this run against Supervisor Christie? Is there something that Steve did that you felt you wanted to challenge him on?
Absolutely. I think some people, that's probably one of the most common questions I get, is why would you challenge a sitting Republican supervisor in the primary? And I think it's our obligation and our duty if we can articulate something we would do different or better than the sitting candidate. I believe as conservatives, we believe in competition, both in the free market and in politics. And the thing that I could do better, I believe, or different, is that Supervisor Christie supported Proposition 463 to raise our taxes under the guise of working on roads. And we already get $100 million a year from the state for road maintenance, and we use it for everything except that. He also supported, put forth a road plan that would increase a sales tax to pay for the roads. Now, neither one of those passed, thank goodness, but it's troubling when we have a conservative Republican supervisor wanting to raise taxes on the highest tax county in the state when we have a 20% level of poverty. There's folks here that just can't handle any more taxes, and we're not getting good value on our taxes. In addition to that, the deals that he has supported, I think, take important money away from the roads and from public safety and other services that the county should be providing.
So has Steve Christie then been a disappointment to you, John Backer?
Well, Steve Christie, and I've said this at every event that he and I have appeared at, he's a gentleman. He always takes a moment to call out my military service. I'm an Air Force veteran, and I really respect that. I've got nothing against him personally. Candidly, I count him amongst my friends. But you can be friends with somebody and still have disagreements. And this is the perfect example of how these disagreements can be brought forward and debated in the public realm. Mr. Christie and I had a debate in Benson. There's a video of it on my website, backbacker.org. It's a 52-minute debate. And the listeners can decide for themselves if they like what I'm putting forth better than what he has done up to this point.
What was the item of contention? Could you summarize what was that item, if you had to pick out one, where the two of you really disagreed at the Benson event that you just referenced?
Well, just in general, him trying to increase taxes more than one time. Fortunately, those things failed, but he promoted and actively campaigned for both. And then the crony deals, such as the American Airlines bailout, where we weren't a party to the contract, voting for Proposition 463, of course, use of certificates of participation, which are non-voter approved debt instruments used by the county to avoid having to go to the bonding process and keep losing and losing and losing. They figured out a way now to go and do whatever they want while mortgaging our county buildings and putting us further in debt. And I don't believe that should be used. I think if you're going to be doing improvements like that, it should be going through the bonding process, and the voters should have the final say.
Why don't you give our listeners a brief background? What is your, give us 30-second kind of bio of John Backer.
Okay. I was came to Tucson, Pima County, July 4th, 1984, with the Air Force. I was an aircraft electrician on the A-10, and then in the Air National Guard here in Tucson on the F-16, I was an electrician. Beyond that, I've had over a 30-year career in technology where I've made a life of solving problems. Most recently, I worked for IBM on a worldwide team that used visual analytics to make sense out of huge amounts of data. Those systems were used around the world to combat terrorism and to find fraud, waste, and abuse. And I got to tell you, with my background, I'm really anxious to run the county budget through a system such as that and figuratively find where all the bodies are buried.
What about the response to the corona, to C-19? If you were a supervisor, would there be any differences there?
I think that's one of the points that Supervisor Christie and I agree on. I don't believe it's right for our governor or our local politicians to dictate the wearing of masks. I believe we live in a free society, and if someone feels safer wearing a mask, they should do so. the older at-risk population. We absolutely need to protect that portion of our community and do that best by keeping them away from folks who might infect them. But I think there's some science out there that shows that the masks don't help. From the New England Journal of Medicine and beyond, I don't believe that's an effective way to protect people.
John, how are you trying to run a campaign? You mentioned you were able to do a debate in Benson, but these are very difficult times to try to get a message out.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I like to do is identify a problem and then figure out a solution. So when it became clear that knocking on doors like I had done in previous campaigns was going to be problematic, I sat and thought, and what I came up with was my digital door knock video that's been shared over 10,000 times. And what it effectively was is I stood outside my front door, knocked on the door while my wife recorded it in video, and I did about a two-minute speech of what would be reminiscent of the message I would deliver if I was knocking on folks' doors. I've had other candidates from other races come to me and say, boy, where did you come up with that? Well, that's what I do is I solve problems, and I'm reaching the voters in different and refreshing ways. Another way that I did it was I thought, what can I create that people are going to want and need and share organically? And what I came up with is every election cycle, I have my friends, family, and neighbors come to me because they're not sure who's running and for what office and who they might should vote for. So what I did was a one-sheet printout of all the Republican candidates running for every office in Pima County. And on my website, there's a link, Republican 2020 candidates, where for any candidate I could find a website or Facebook page for, I linked it. And so from that sheet combined with my website, they can fully explore all the candidates very easily. And it's been shared over 10,000 times as well.
Wow.
So I just like using those creative ideas.
All right, John Backer, we have to run. What is your website, please?
Backer.org.
John Backer, thank you very much. Pima County Supervisor candidate, Republican in District 4. Thanks, John.
Thank you, sir.
All right, coming up tomorrow, we'll have with me in studio all three of the candidates in the Congressional District number 2 race. This is the Republicans who one of them hopes to emerge to challenge the incumbent and Kirkpatrick. So that's tomorrow. We've got a special edition of our Friday roundtable. Normally we just have one newsmaker. Tomorrow we'll have three candidates with me. So that's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. Bill Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Tom Fairbanks, a pleasure as always. Thanks, Tom. Have a great afternoon, everybody.